the Blood Cancer Experience, a podcast by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. This podcast connects people affected by a blood cancer to resources that inform, support, educate, and empower. When it comes to cancer, it's hard to navigate the unknown, and there are no easy answers. We're here to bring you the information you need to help you make sense of every step of the blood cancer experience. My name is Desiree Naylor, and I am the Community Services Manager for the Prairies Region at the LLSC. Today on the show, I'm talking about life after cancer with Hart Searle. Hart is a 66-year-old, has been married for 35 years to his wife Brenda, and they have two children. Prior to retiring, Hart worked in the oil and gas industry in communications. Hart is a long-term supporter of the LLSC, including sharing his experiences and his story in his role as a peer support volunteer. Thank you, Hart, for joining us today.
Well, thanks very much for having me on.
Can you tell us something interesting about yourself, something that can help us get to know you outside of your cancer experience?
I grew up in Winnipeg, and you know the old joke about Winnipeg, it's 10 months of winter and 2 months of bad skating. So my mother, with four young children in the house, at the time, would dispatch me and my younger brother, my next youngest brother, to a nearby outdoor skating rink. And what that did was really developed my love of being outdoors in the winter, and with that, a love of hockey, which I still play, old guys hockey, but nevertheless still get out and play. And my wife still teases me about how much I like to shovel snow. And I think if you grow up in Winnipeg, you shovel a lot of snow and you kind of have to learn to like it. So I still like the winter weather. I still like to get outside in the winter a lot, and I still don't mind shoveling snow.
Well, that's awesome, considering you live in a very snowy Calgary area for sure. I'm going to start with having you sharing a bit about your cancer experience.
Well, I was first diagnosed in August of 2002 with stage 3 follicular large B-cell non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in my neck and abdomen. And at the time, I was 49 years old. I was treated in the fall of 2002 with 6 cycles of CHOP chemotherapy that ended in late November. And in late 2002, I had a CT scan that indicated my treatment was working. So I kind of carried on with my life and started to try to move on and put this experience behind me. However, in August 2005, I started to feel some discomfort on my left side just below my rib cage, which it kind of felt like a pulled muscle. Anyway, the discomfort persisted until it became so painful I had to go to the emergency room at the Foothills Hospital in Calgary. And a CT scan revealed that I had relapsed as the mass in my abdomen had reappeared. And a transplant was recommended as the next treatment option. This is when I came under the care of Dr. Douglas Stewart and his team at the Bone Marrow Transplant Clinic at the Tom Baker Cancer Center in Calgary. Dr. Stewart and his team, they laid out the pros and cons for my wife and I of the autologous transplant versus an allogenic transplant. And I chose to have an auto transplant. So I was treated with a regimen of chemo in September, and then followed by another round of chemo following, and received the auto transplant in late October of 2005. And I also had abdominal radiation in 20 fractions between mid-January and mid-February 2006. Through the spring and early summer, I continued to see my oncologist, had regular checkups, diagnostic tests. However, those tests were not providing a real clear indication that my cancer was in remission. So I saw my oncologist in October of 2006, and he told me, unfortunately, that my lymphoma had relapsed and was progressing. So I was referred back to Dr. Stewart and his team at the transplant clinic, and they wanted me to look into an allogenic stem cell transplant, should I be a viable candidate and a suitable donor match could be identified. And to my great fortune, two of my siblings were a very good match, and ultimately my sister, my older sister, was selected as the donor. Not long after that, late October 2006 timeframe, started preparing for my allo stem cell transplant with another round of chemo, and then subsequently started my high dose chemo treatment in early December and received my allo transplant around mid-December 2006. And then in April of 2007, my wife and I received the news that my PET scan had come back clear, no evidence of my cancer. And this was actually the first time since my initial diagnosis 5 years previously that I'd ever had a report with that kind of information. So needless to say, it was great news, and my diagnostic tests have been good ever since, such that in January of 2018, I was finally released from the care of the bone marrow transplant clinic, and it's been about 12 years, I guess, since I received active treatment.
That's amazing. What's been the biggest challenge that you've faced since receiving your diagnosis?
As much as there are certainly physical challenges associated with the kind of cancer I had, I would say that for me, the emotional, the mental aspects of my illness really became my greatest challenge, especially after I relapsed. The feeling of losing control and isolation, and I became very actually morose, and I was quite unhappy. And my wife could see that even her valiant attempts to encourage me were no longer having much, if any, effect. So a mutual friend of mine suggested that I seek some counseling from a friend of hers who was a retired psychologist. And coincidentally, this psychologist was also a lymphoma survivor. And so I decided to meet her, and it really turned out to be a significant milestone event for me. I can still recall it quite vividly, literally within a few minutes of me talking and sort of telling my story. The psychologist could see what was going on and why I was feeling the way that I was. And I guess the really important point I want to get to was she could see that I had allowed my condition to, in a sense, victimize me, that instead of seeing myself as really an individual with a serious illness, I had started to see myself as the embodiment of a disease that had overtaken me, and that this had virtually paralyzed me. And she said to me, I bet you have a lot of what she called what if scenarios running around in your mind, and you keep rehearsing them over and over. And that was true. That was completely accurate. And just the recognition of somebody understanding that, and she went on to explain to me that by endlessly rehearsing these kind of negative scenarios that weren't ever likely to manifest themselves, I had, in essence, I guess, stopped living my life. And I had become consumed by all of these negative thoughts and feelings, and I really had no mechanism to relieve them. So very emphatically and very firmly, she helped me understand that the only way to feel better was to try and let go of these fears, these negative feelings, to not let my illness victimize me, and to start living in the land of what she called what is, and leaving the realm of what if. And I guess maybe it sounds a bit simplistic, and I'm not suggesting that it was easy, but I only saw her the one time, but I left that one session with a much different perspective and outlook. And little by little, I started to feel better.
That is a great outlook. How would you say that your relationships have changed with your loved ones since being diagnosed?
My children were 14 and 12 when I was first diagnosed. And it was very difficult for them, very challenging to talk to them about it, and to see, for them to see one of their parents experience what I ultimately went through. But I do think it brought us all closer together. I think it helped them understand that big challenges can be overcome. I think it also reinforced for them, also my siblings and, you know, friends, family, just how important good health is, not to take it for granted, how important quality health care is, and not to take that for granted. And I think just to appreciate and be grateful for what you have.
This next question is a two-part question I'm going to throw at you. What did your loved ones do during your cancer experience that made it better for you, but also what did the healthcare team do during your cancer experience that made that whole, any part of the cancer journey easier or better for you?
With my family, my loved ones, I think more than anything, it was just to be positive, to be encouraging, give me that continuous support and motivation, and giving me space when I needed it. This was all very new ground for all of us. I believed strongly in the medical advice that I was getting from the oncologists and the specialists at the Tom Baker, and felt that I was in very good hands. But I really one of the things that really stood out for me was the nurses that looked after me, because, you know, really I spent an awful lot of time at the Tom Baker in the Foothills Hospital. I spent most of that time with the nurses, and just how important they are in such a challenging dynamic. They're the individuals that patients see the most often. They're sort of the constant. I thought of them as kind of the lifeline that patients hang on to when they're feeling vulnerable and adrift. Their compassion was just critical, I believe, to my good outcomes. My experience, and I have talked to other patients about it, you know, they're sometimes worried about expressing their fears with their loved ones, even with friends, with doctors, and even counselors. But it seemed like with the nurses, at least for me, I felt that I could pretty much tell them anything.
How has the experience of cancer changed you?
I think it's just understanding that you can't control everything. You kind of have to let go. And I think to continue to try and live your life as best you can, try not let the disease define who you are or what you do or what you want to do. I was really someone who really liked to be in control all the time. You know, I'm a very organized person, a very detail-oriented. And I think for me, I learned that, you know, some of those things just aren't that important. You hear this a lot, but I think cherishing the simple things, not sweating the small stuff so much, and really trying to not become a victim of your illness, but as continue to see yourself as a person with an illness who can still do a lot and still live their life and enjoy it.
What is one thing that you wish people knew about cancer and how it impacts your experience of the world?
I was asked this actually in a work scenario with some of my colleagues. And I remember saying to them, it can really create a profound sense of isolation. It's kind of like watching the world go on with a pane of glass in front of you. And there's all those people out there who aren't ill, you know, who are just doing their thing and enjoying their lives. And you're on the other side of that pane of glass. And so I think I learned from that, and I must admit, I wasn't a very good student, but I think to get out of that sense of isolation, I think engaging with others, trying not to become isolated and self-consumed, reaching out, and there are lots of resources available. With the benefit of hindsight, I came to recognize that I personally became much too isolated, that I became very inward. When I'm doing my volunteer work for the society, it's one thing that I mention because I get asked questions sort of around this topic. And I encourage people to think about it that way and to, you know, to think about getting outside of themselves, I suppose. You do need to take time for yourself. You need to take time to process what you're feeling, what you're going through, because it obviously comes as a big shock and a surprise for the most part. But, you know, try to do what you enjoy. Try to continue to pursue what interests you and motivates you. Try to be forward looking. And I think, you know, one of the things that, you know, when others express a desire to help you, I say let them. You know, when we let people support us, it's helpful for you, and it's like giving them a gift. So, you know, we're helping them feel connected to you, to the patient, to the person who's undergoing this. That's useful, and I think important. And, you know, knowing that you're not alone. There's multiple support systems out there, and think about that, and you'll find what works for you. And the patients that people that I talk to as a volunteer for the society now, I often tell them that. I say, you know, this is so individualistic. You have to really find what works for you.
There will be many people affected by blood cancer that will be listening to this podcast. What message would you give to someone that may be going through treatment or struggling with a diagnosis?
One of the things that I learned was that the pace of research into blood cancer treatments has accelerated so much. There were drugs that I was able to get in like 2005-06 that were really available to me in 2002. So, you know, the research has accelerated a lot. The therapies and the treatments have improved, I'd say, you know, in a very significant way. And I guess the other thing is, I talked about it earlier, just try and focus on what you can control. And really that's all about, you know, your attitude, you know, and how you're looking at this. And again, I'm not suggesting it's easy, it wasn't. But, you know, I really came to understand that so much of what was going on was out of my control. And the things that really helped me with a little bit of professional counseling was focusing on you know, what I could control. And that really helped a lot. If you think about it this way, it really costs you nothing to be positive, but it can cost you a whole lot if you're negative.
What a positive message. Hart, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. It was so inspiring and uplifting to hear your story, your experience, your journey, and that message of hope. If listeners have any questions or need support to navigate their experience, I encourage you to connect with the community service manager in your region. You can visit llscanada.org to connect with us. Until next time, stay well.
Thank you for listening to the Blood Cancer Experience podcast series by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. You can find us wherever you access your favorite podcasts, so be sure to subscribe and leave us a review. If you have an idea for the show, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email with your comments or suggestions to canadainfo@lls.org. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada is dedicated to funding cutting-edge research and supporting people affected by blood cancers. To learn more and access resources including fact sheets, booklets, and webcasts, visit llscanada.org.